As we are live on Tuesday, January the 28th, this is episode 3617 of the Survival Podcast, and today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, cooking, and from an angle we've never talked about before, and that is saucy cooking. No, we are not invoking or inviting or involving Nicole Sauce on today's show. When I say sauce here, I mean actual sauce, like sauce that you would put on food. And there's a couple reasons for this. One, if you talk to any chef, they'll tell you one of the real secrets to elevating food is the sauce. I mean, the sauce is the boss. I'm sure you've heard that in barbecue circuits. But sauce is only, you know, one piece of this, I guess. More, we're also talking about cooking for yourself and doing so at an elevated level. I don't think there's really been a time where that's more important. I've been trying to drill this into my grandkids and make it part of their homeschooling. My wife's been doing the same thing. It amazes me how many people go out to eat two or three times a week and at the same time say they're broke. I mean, it absolutely flabbergasts me. I love going out to eat. We probably go out to eat on average about 3 to 4 times a month, right around once a week. Sometimes we go a couple weeks without doing it. But in the end, probably maybe once a week. But we don't complain about not having money. And we tend to go to places where they'll make things that either I can't make or the things that I want to make are such a pain in the ass that I'd rather let somebody else do it. Or it's because it's a social thing with friends or what have you. But to watch 20-somethings who can't make a box of fucking Kraft macaroni and cheese tell me how hard their life is because they don't have enough money when they're going out to eat constantly. And that doesn't necessarily always mean good quality food. In fact, it often doesn't. You know, I'm going to McDonald's and dollar menu in or whatever the hell it is, probably $1.50 or $2 menu now or whatever it is. And when you start adding it up, you go like you're blowing 10, 15, 20 bucks a pop on your meals. And you could be cooking for a day for what you're spending for lunch at these fast food joints or Five Guys or whatever. And to me, this is a survival topic. This is a prepper topic. This is a lifestyle design topic. Not that long ago, almost everybody that grew up learned how to cook to some degree. Kids generally cooked because if you didn't cook, you didn't necessarily always get what you want. I first started learning how to cook when I was like sub 10, right? I mean, like 8, 9, 10 years old, somewhere in that range. And I used to go fishing all the time before we moved back to Pennsylvania because that was something I could do on my own in Florida. And my family just wouldn't make the effort to cook food, that even if I cleaned it when I brought it back. So if I wanted to eat those catfish or eat those bass, I had to cook them. So I started learning basic stuff on a grill. As I got older, especially once I got out of the military and I came here to Texas and started living on my own, I'm like, if I want to eat the quality of food that I want, I need to learn how to make it. And, you know, this is pre-widespread internet era. This is 1993. There was some internet, but it wasn't much, you know. And so I had to kind of just figure things out. And I watched a lot of cooking shows and all. And over time, I eventually learned that there were little things that drastically changed your food. Here was one example. You know, I was probably in my early 20s when I learned that if you actually took a piece of meat and you made it bone freaking dry before you put it in that searing hot pan, that it actually seared and actually made a nice crust. Or the same thing with like a chicken skin or something. Like dry it off, throw some salt on it, let it air dry in the refrigerator for a while, take it out, and then cook it. You'd get a much better result. Well, one of the other things that I eventually learned was that sauces were a way to do a couple things. One was just elevate the food, but two, to provide variety. I can cook literally the same base food for you, use 3 different sauces, serve it to you 3 nights in a row, and you feel like you have variety, even though maybe every night you were eating chicken thighs. Maybe they're cooked just a little bit differently. Maybe one day we're cooking them skin on, right, with the bone in, and we're getting a really crusty, nice, beautiful skin. Maybe we even dusted it with a little bit of baking powder to really crisp it up. Maybe hit it with a little bit of pork rind breadcrumbs, crisp it up even more. And then we're going to do a drizzle of like a buffalo wing sauce on it. That would be one night. Another day, maybe we go ahead and we skin it. We use that skin for something else. bones come out and go to stock. Thigh gets sliced up, gets marinated in like a lemon pepper, and maybe we put like a béarnaise on it. And then you just have the same meal twice, basically, but it seems totally different. And then you change out your vegetable or whatever your sides are. If you're carnivore or close to carnivore, because a lot of these sauces are not carnivore, but they are definitely keto or can be keto that we're going to cover today. In fact, I've got 15 sauces we're going to cover today. Don't worry, it's not going to be boring. I'm not going to sit here and explain exactly how to make each one. I'm going to give you the sauce. I'm going to tell you the base ingredients, and I'll give you some clarifiers on that when we get started with going through them as to, like, you can add things, take things out, et cetera. And I'm going to tell you, like, a couple pairings for them. That's it. And that's going to try to open your mind. And before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor of the day number one today is USA BerkeyFilters.com. Now, this is interesting to me. The first comment in today's live feed stream is from Richard. And it was before I even started. It was when I was getting ready. I saw a comment come in. And I'd already selected our sponsor today. Here's what he said. Water is out in my neighborhood. I have been listening to you these past 15 years. I'm pretty much unaffected. Stored water prepared for the wind. Thank you, Jack. Not exactly directly related, but very closely, water is important. So I do recommend storing water, but I also recommend filtering your water. And a Berkey water filtration system is one of those things that just can't break. It's got no moving parts. If you install your filters right, it's pretty freaking bulletproof. And you put water in the top and cleaner water comes out the bottom. And if you're in a situation like Richard, it only means something if you stored the water. But what about when you get that boil water advisory? You realize that that means your water has been effed up for a while before you got the advisory while you were drinking it. Yeah, if you were using a good filter product like Berkey, you wouldn't be worried about it at all. Check them out at usaberkeyfilters.com. Next up today, JM Bullion. You guys know I'm a Bitcoin bull. I think everybody should have some Bitcoin in your investment portfolio. But I also am a big believer in precious metals, specifically silver and gold. At about 5% of your net worth, up to about 10%. Personally, for me, it's about 5% of my net worth I try to maintain in precious metals, silver and or gold. But I always get my silver at JM Bullion if I'm going to order it online. If you're buying it locally, I understand. But if you're going to order it, order from JM. Why? Well, they're my sponsor. So you would think, well, Jack naturally would go to them. But I don't have a special deal with them. They don't sell me silver cheaper because they're a sponsor. They actually are just the best choice you have. They have the best pricing of all the big silver houses, but they're not that big. I can talk directly to the president of the company if there's a problem. They do a discount for MSB members. You guys can get that too if you're an MSB member. All orders ship free, and silver is silver no matter who you get it from. You know you can trust this company. They've been working with me for over 10 years. So if you're looking to add to your silver and or gold stack, do that today. Next up, real quick, I'm going to bring this to the beginning since the show could go a little bit long. But you guys know you can help support me a couple ways. One is by joining the MSB. You get members discounts on tons of stuff like JM Bullion and special deals from the Berkey guy and a ton of other stuff. The cannabis and coffee stuff alone should probably pay for your membership if you use products out of both or either of those categories and drink the best coffee you can get your hands on, like what I'm drinking today, which is from Nicole Sauce. This is actually Jack's Bourbon Blend Coffee. But the other way is to do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. All you got to do is go there before you buy anything online, and no matter what you eventually buy, if you use my links there, you'll help me out, even if it's not something I've reviewed. But if it is something I've reviewed, you're getting the benefit of a product that I own, I use, and I would buy again that's been intensely researched and put through trials by me. I've been doing this now for about 8 years, and I've gotten pretty good at picking the right products both for myself and for my audience. What's on sale right now are the Barina LED grow lights that I mentioned to you yesterday. Now is the time to get your plants started. If you don't have grow lights, these are the ones to get. And I'm running them 2 days in a row, but there's something I forgot to tell you yesterday. Not only are they a great price, a six-pack of 4-foot LED high-intensity grow lights, full spectrum, at $100 is a deal. But right now, Barina has a $15 coupon on all their six-packs. So you can get either the 2-foot lights or the 4-foot lights with an additional $15 off. So not only is it the time, because if you don't do it soon, you're not going to get it done in time to get planting done this year, but you're also going to get a discount on a product that's already really well priced. So now let's go ahead and dig on into it. I see some people doing this already, but if you are going to ask me a question today, try to keep it on topic if you can, but I'll answer anything at the end. But make sure you put the word question, or if you have a comment for me to respond to, put the word comment, either of those words, in all caps first, then give me your comment or your question. It'll make it more likely that I'm able to catch up with you guys and actually notice what you're doing, because I am a one-eyed jack like the wild card, and I'm all by myself today. All right, with that, let's go ahead and start talking about today's topic. Again, we're talking about cooking and specifically using sauces. So one of the things that I really wanted to point out today, again, in addition to the fact this is a prepper and lifestyle skill, or lifestyle design skill, is also that I think it's really important when we start trying to change our diet that we don't do things to kind of nuke ourselves and set ourselves up for failure. So one of the things that I have heard over and over from people when you talk to them about keto or carnivore or ketovore or just low carb or even, you know, less restrictive, something like a primal or paleo, which in some ways is more and in some ways is less restrictive, is I don't get enough variety. And I think by variety, what most people have tricked themselves into believing is if you buy 20 different packages of different varieties of like instant rice and instant noodles and shit like that, you have variety. Well, you don't. You have the same garbage crap over and over again. But I get it. I get it. When you tell, like, somebody's like going to really focus in on like most of their meat being beef, you know, how many cuts of beef are there? There's actually a lot. But most of you are like the ribeye, the New York strip, the porterhouse, which is the New York strip with the filet mignon. There's a filet. A lot of people can't afford to eat that very often. I would be among them even. Ear ground beef, you got beef rib, you got beef chuck. There's a lot of different things, but in the end, it's all beef. Just changing the sauce massively expands the variety. Give me chicken, pork, and beef, common cuts, and give me 5 sauces, right? And I can make you 15 different dishes. I can actually go, if I start making other combinations like chicken and beef, right, I can make even more, but chicken, pork, and beef, 1 cut of each. So pork chop, something like beef chuck or chuck eye or ribeye, or any decent cut of beef, and then like chicken thigh. You give me those 3 things, and I use 1 protein per meal with 3 sauces. I got 15. That's almost 3 weeks of variety, work weeks anyway, right? Like, so now if I give you 15 sauces, and I give you a couple pairings each, I'm going to give you 30 different things you can make today, and it never tastes the same. And so it is great that sauces give us this variety in our cooking. Another thing that I want to bring up with you guys on this as well is a lot of the stuff I'm going to give you today straight out of the gate is keto or low carb. You just don't have to do anything. Some of it will have maybe a thickening agent like flour in it. You can use something like guar gum or cream cheese or almond flour to thicken things if you feel they need thickening, or you can discard them. But the reason I love these is because they naturally fit into the world that many of us are trying to get to. And even those of you that aren't worried so much about low carb but want to eat naturally and healthily through something like a primal or paleo, you can figure out how to adapt the few things that may be in some of the recipes that are included today that you can change. I did give you a recipe for every sauce. I'm not going to go completely through them. I'm going to give you the highlights of what goes in them and some ideas for what you can do with them. But when you click those recipes, know this. I didn't even know I was going to do this show when I woke up this morning. I decided to do this show at 8 o'clock. I put this entire show together between 8 o'clock and noon, plus doing my email and all my other stuff. Taking care of the animals, taking care of the kids, all of it, right? So I just grabbed a basic recipe for each one. You can modify it as you see fit, so know that. Many ingredients also of these sauces today are things that you can produce at home. Many of you are already producing at home or you already are using in your daily life. So like the first one, I won't tell you what it is, but it involves egg yolks, butter, lemon juice, and salt. I would bet in most of your homes, the only one of those you might need to get your hands on is lemon juice. And many of you already have lemons in your home, but you're unless you live in Southern Cal or South Florida or South Texas, you're probably not growing lemons. But eggs, yeah, many of you guys are either doing dairy on your own property or you're buying from somebody else so you can make your own butter. And who doesn't have salt? That's just an example. Anybody want to guess what that first sauce is? Egg yolks, butter, lemon juice, and salt. I see John Schmata's here. He probably knows what it is. Anyway, last is, this is an exceptional way, again, to elevate your food to chef quality. So let's start digging into it. The first sauce, since nobody answered there in the live chat feed, is Rodney got it. It's hollandaise. And hollandaise is a sauce I recommend everybody learn how to make. And I would tell you it's probably the most, well, Bernays can be just as frustrating, but it is the most frustrating, simple thing you will ever learn as a cook. It's so easy to do, and it's so easy to screw up where you get a separation in it and it kind of curdles, right? So, but once you know how to do it and you've done it a few times and you get good at it, it's going to be one of those go-tos that you use all the time. Again, it's made with egg yolks, butter, lemon juice, and salt. That's it. It's keto as keto gets. And I would also say, you know, other than the lemon juice, how much more carnivore could you get with that? What are some good ways to use it? You know, classically spooned over like steamed broccoli. Or I like to make my broccoli in a frying pan, hard fried, kind of like a stir fry, but nothing but maybe a little bit of butter with it or a little bit of olive oil and get a little char on it. And then I want to cook that till it's got a little bit of bite, a little bit of like al dente left to it, the texture, a little bit of char for that flavor, hit it with a little bit of salt, and then drizzle a hollandaise on it. I mean, asparagus and hollandaise are classic pairing in steakhouses everywhere. But how about over poached eggs? Egg Benedict, hollandaise, that's a thing. A lot of people are like, well, I can't have eggs Benedict anymore because I'm keto or I'm carnivore. And, you know, English muffin doesn't work for that. There's a lot of things you could do. One thing you could do is make yourself a keto crab cake and do a crab cake Benedict. And the way you do that is sub in for your breadcrumbs, just sub in crumbled pork rind breadcrumbs. And pretty much everything else that goes in a crab cake is easy to stay with keto. That would be one. Or just do poached eggs with maybe some thick bacon and a hollandaise, and it's fantastic. So hollandaise is a very, very, very simple one. And next up is Bernays. Bernays is actually very similar. Here's what goes into Bernays. Egg yolks, butter, white wine vinegar, shallots, tarragon, chervil, salt, and black pepper. Now, you can grow quite a few of those ingredients, the shallots, the tarragon, and the chervil. You can grow black pepper. If you can do that in the United States and make it worth your time, let me know how you're doing it, because it's just, it can be done, but it's probably not worth it. Again, salt you could pick up anywhere. Everybody has salt in their life, I hope. But a Bernays is really great with a juicy grilled steak with a Bernays drizzled over it. It is fantastic, especially a steak like a filet mignon. The issue with certain really expensive, John's got tons of questions. I'm going to have to put a limit on you, John. You're going to become the new Jake. Are you actually Jake with all those questions? Anyway, when you deal with like a filet, it's an incredibly tender steak. What people will say is it doesn't have much flavor. What they really mean is it doesn't have much fat. Because fat is a lot like salt in that not only does it have its own flavor, but it brings out other flavors. So if you've ever had a filet and you're like, you know, this is really tender. It's nice and juicy. It was cooked perfectly. It's nice and pink to red because if you full, you know, well done cook a filet mignon, you've sinned against cow and you shouldn't do that. But you're like, it just lacks flavor. And this is why people, you know, if you tell me you're just getting steak and I don't know what comes with it and I can have a ribeye or I can have a filet, I'm going to take the ribeye every time because of that added flavor. When we bring fat to a filet, all of a sudden there's the flavor that was all it's the same cow, right? So that's one of my favorite things is a Bernays over like a filet. Also doing a béarnaise with, you take what's, if you buy it, if you're going to eat filet, unless you get some kind of special deal on it or something, the best thing to do is buy a whole filet and trim it yourself. Well, you can take your ends, your kind of tapered ends that are a little bit too thin to cut your medallions out of, and what's called your chain. I won't get into that. Clean that all up and do it almost like a stir fry, and then do a béarnaise on that, especially if you add something like a good kind of meaty mushroom to the party, like a shiitake or a hen of the woods with that all kind of done together. Oh, God, now I'm hungry. Another option, though, is like a roasted salmon, and you get like a really buttery herb finish using your béarnaise with salmon. And salmon, if you get really high-quality salmon, has quite a bit of fat with it. But a lot of salmon just kind of lacks for enough fat, especially in, you know, the main steaky part of the fish. It's usually the belly that has the fat in it. So a lot of times salmon, you know, you know it's not dry, right? It hasn't been overcooked. You can squeeze it and see that it still has moisture in it, and yet it has a dry taste, if you've ever experienced that with any fish. Another fish that does that is swordfish has that, or mahi has that. It seems like it's dry, and you know that you didn't dry it out, but it seems dry. A béarnaise is a great pairing for fish like that. Next up, really, really popular in South American cuisine, the chimichurri sauce. Chimichurri is made with parsley, garlic, olive oil, red wine vinegar, oregano, chili flakes, salt, and black pepper. Again, there's variations on all these. There's recipes for all these in the audio notes, which will be live about 30 minutes after we finish the live stream for you over at the Survival Podcast. But this is fantastic. Again, you think South American food, you think things like skirt steak, flank steak, picanhas, any grilled steak, especially sliced on the bias, open those grains up, drizzle a chimichurri over that, and it is freaking fantastic. Another option, though, is going to the vegetable side, like cauliflower. I'm not a huge cauliflower fan, but if you grill cauliflower, get some char on it and put a chimichurri on it, and when you grill it, you want to grill it with like an olive oil drizzle and salt before you grill it. Get some of that char and smoke to it and a little chimichurri. It's a pretty damn good side dish. It's also good on a grilled zucchini, again, or like a meaty mushroom. Any kind of a meaty mushroom, even as a side dish, if the chimichurri is not going on the main deal. Next up, super easy one. I bet you almost everybody in this audience that gardens at any level, every spring, summer, fall, you're growing basil. Basil is one of the most wonderful herbs. There's hundreds of varieties of basil. Good old typical, you know, sweet basil is just fantastic, though, to make a pesto. Pestos are super simple. Classic is basil, olive oil, Parmesan cheese, pine nuts, maybe a little garlic and salt. That's just so simple. It's just stupid simple, very Italian in its roots. If you've ever been to like an old Italian lady's house and she's put out like some bread and some pesto for dipping, it's just a fantastic, simple, easy snack with a lot of nutritional value packed into it because of the cheese and the pine nuts. One of the things I want to let you know about pesto, though, is it doesn't have to be pine nuts. There's a lot of things that you can sub in to a pesto other than pine nuts. Walnut works effing amazing. And if you live in certain parts of the country, maybe you already are growing walnuts. If you have the patience to deal with deshelling black walnut might make the best pesto ever. And there's probably some Italian right now that wants to stiletto stab me in the kidneys or something for saying that. But if you've ever had a pesto made with black walnut, it's even worth maybe buying some shell black walnut to do it with, because that bite that the black walnut has, it's just fantastic. I've done pesto made with almond. I've done it when I was out of everything else with cashews. Anything like that, except for the walnut, you don't get a lot of carry-through flavor from the nut. It's more of the nut itself as a carrier and a protein and a fat boost to the whole thing. But those are fantastic. Now, classically, pesto is a very big pasta dish. Many of us are not really eating very much pasta. But one of the things I love to do with pesto is grilled chicken thigh or chicken breast or sauteed any kind of chicken and basically cut it into bite-sized chunks either before you cook it or after it's been cooked and then toss it with the chicken just like you're tossing it with a pasta. It takes something, you know, chicken can be kind of boring unless we do something to it. Well, this is where you can take just like salt, pepper, cook your chicken, coat it in pesto, and I think it blows away any use of pasta with a pesto. The other thing you can do with it is mix it with something like roasted spaghetti squash. There would be your low carb pasta alternative, or using something to make like a zoodle type thing out of zucchini or tramoscino or something like that actually works really, really great. And John's saying thin pesto with a little more oil and vinegar, you have a great dressing or marinade. I would say you can go that way with it, or you can just increase the oil to make it more of a drizzle sauce, and then you have a pesto that can be thrown into something like a squeeze bottle and used very much like a typical pesto without adding the vinegar if you don't want to throw the acid on top of it for that type of use. Because while it would make a great salad dressing, and John makes some great salad dressings, it may be off-putting on something like a chicken drizzle because the acidity of the vinegar now is going to compete for that kind of basil punch from a classic pesto. So you could go either way with that. And while we're on that, let me just say that like all of these sauces, except for a few things that are more of like a paste that we'll talk about, like a gremolata, are exceptional for make up more than you need. Get yourself a really, a few good squeeze bottles. Make sure you label them and keep them in your refrigerator. And then instead of like a huge amount, like making a sauce every time, you could pull something from what will go good with that. What do I have available in the refrigerator? Pull that out and give it a drizzle over it. Or like, get a little chef treatment, make it look cool on the plate. And then it's not just to look cool. Then as you're eating your food, you can drag it through it. Because here's another thing I'll caution you with sauce. If you do something and you get that good crispy crunch on it, like a crispy chicken skin, don't soak it in fucking sauce and ruin the crisp. Like, put it to the side, put it underneath so that it can be picked up and used and you don't ruin that crunch that you worked so hard for. The other thing is a lot of times people don't want to use the sauce out of the refrigerator because it's ice cold. So we're putting it on hot food, but if it's not piping hot when we do it, we get kind of that, everybody's done it where somebody adds a sauce after the fact and you get cold sauce on warm food and it just doesn't feel right, Well, here's the easy thing to do with that. Take a bowl or a pot or something, throw it in your sink, turn your hot water on, fill the pot to about as deep as the sauce in the bottle is. And while you're cooking, just let that bottle sit in that warm water. It'll bring that temperature up way faster than sitting on the counter, but it won't make it hot. And when you throw it back in the refrigerator, if you don't use it all, it'll cool down really quick for you. And you won't get that, like, it tastes like somebody took ketchup out of the refrigerator, put it on top of a steak, and then should be, kind of beaten about the head and shoulders for doing something like that to a steak. Spaghetti squash, any kind of pasta alternative. I like pestos with beef and stuff like that, but not as much as chicken is a good stand-in for something like a potato that would go with pesto or a pasta that would go with pesto. If you do eat potatoes, try this. Dice up some potato. Fry it in a good quality fat. Duck fat is perfect, almost like a home fry, right? And then drizzle that with pesto. It's pretty freaking good, even though it's not keto at all. Next up, aioli, right? Aioli is basically mayonnaise with flavor, right? Now, the big difference between a mayonnaise and an aioli is that a mayonnaise, intentionally, we want to be neutral. So we're going to use eggs and a neutral oil with mayo, where with an aioli, we're definitely going to use something like, let's say an olive oil would be one option we could use with an aioli, something with some flavor. We're going to add garlic and lemon juice. So your basic aioli, and aioli is a whole world of its own, is going to be egg yolks, olive oil, garlic, lemon juice, and salt. But you can go anywhere you want from that point. Like, a little bit of something like gochujang, which is a fermented Korean chili paste mixed in with that, makes an incredible dip for like a sweet potato fry would be one example of something that just will blow your brains with how good it really is. But we want more flavor. And I will say this about aioli. You should learn to make aioli. And if you like mayo, you should learn to make like a toned down aioli to be your mayo. There is no reason whatsoever for you to buy mayonnaise. It doesn't make any sense. Now, if you don't have easy access to eggs, okay, maybe it does. I don't know. You don't use it that much. I don't know. But if you are like most of the people in this audience and you keep chickens and you're buying mayonnaise, I don't know what to tell you, because either you're buying something like Hellman's, which is using disgusting seed oils that you should not put in your body, or you're buying something like Miracle Whip, which isn't even human food. I refuse to even engage in a debate about Miracle Whip. Go look at where it came from. It came out of the Depression. It's not food that should go in humans' bodies. It takes some of the decent part of shitty mayo and makes it worse. That's all I'm going to say about it. Just don't do that. So you've got this great quality egg. And you're like, but Jack, I go buy Mark Sessions or somebody else's avocado mayo. And it's just fine product. There's nothing wrong with it. But you're paying a lot of money for it. I mean, that's the other side of it. Like, the Primal Mayo that Mark Sesson makes, like, if you buy that at Costco, it's actually affordable, but there are giant drums of it. So if you're not eating enough to get through it before it starts to go off on you, that doesn't make sense. You can whip up an aioli or a mayo in literal minutes. You know exactly where the ingredients came from. You're not going to get sick. You can eat raw eggs. It won't hurt you. And when you add something like the acid from the lemon to it, you're not going to have any problems. Nothing's going to go wrong. Let me put it this way. You're not going to eat bad egg, because if an egg is bad, your nose will tell you. So don't be afraid to make your own mayos and aiolis. Now, if you're doing a classic aioli, again, egg yolk, olive oil, garlic, lemon juice, salt, here's some really cool things to do with it. This will not be a blue cheese dressing. It will be very close to it. Take some chunky blue cheese. Mix it into your aioli. In fact, you can even blend it when you're making your aioli straight into it. But then when you go ahead and transfer it to your jar or whatever, your serving dish or what have you, add some chunks of blue cheese to it. And use that as your blue cheese with your hot wings. You can thank me later for that. It's pretty outstanding. Or like if you are going to do the burger thing but go bunless, like just a good aioli on that's great. Aiolis are also good for flavor and for the effect of a sear. So take a steak that you're going to sear and put a thin layer of an aioli or a good quality mayo on it and sear. It will blow you away. It won't taste like mayonnaise when you eat it. It will have enhanced flavor, but the sear you get is effing ridiculous. And you're like, I don't understand why. I'm sure there's a chemistry person out there that can explain why. I haven't gone deep enough to discuss that or to understand exactly what that chemistry reason is, but it doesn't matter. It just works. Next up, lemon butter. It doesn't get easier than lemon butter. You're talking butter, lemon juice, salt, black pepper. And there's nothing wrong with making a garlic lemon butter, which you then would add garlic. Real simple. A fine diced garlic added to that would work really well too. Classic, drizzle it over seared salmon or trout or honestly any fish. Pour over roasted shrimp or lobster tails. Both of those are just great. But it's also like a good lemon butter, and then you add the garlic and saute your shrimp in that going toward a scampi. Unfreaking believable. So freaking simple. And there's so many things that you can do with a lemon butter or a lemon garlic butter. But fish is something it just pairs really well with. But it's also good with things like a spaghetti squash or zoodles, especially if you've done something different with your protein. So you're not like doubling up on the sauce on both things. So now you've got this contrast of this, like this zing and tartness of your lemon butter on like a zoodle or like an angel hair pasta that you make out of like a zucchini, and then maybe alongside that you have something like a pesto coated chicken or a chimichurri steak. you start to see how you can enhance the variety we were talking at the beginning even more. How about salsa verde, right? So we're back into the world of South American stuff here. I make my own version of this, but a basic version, tomatillos, jalapenos, garlic, cilantro, lime juice, onion, and salt. When I make this, I like to take my tomatillos and my jalapenos and cut them in half. And if you don't want to blow your brains out with heat, go ahead and seed your jalapenos at that point. Hit both of them with olive oil and salt and grill them first. And then make your tomatillo salsa. The recipe I have for you does not say to do that. I totally do that, and I make it in what's called a molcajete, which is like a great big giant mortar and pestle that's made out of volcanic rock. And it is a fantastic way to make something. Like, I'll make a big giant thing of it and just set it in the center of the table. It looks cool as shit, and it is delicious on a lot of things. But one of the best uses of a salsa verde is make a really good pork carnitas, where you have the slow cooked pork, but then you finish it so that you put some crunch on it. And you take the shredded carnitas and just lay that on the plate and just drizzle a salsa verde over that. It's a totally different experience. If you're a taco person, a shredded carnita or just shredded pork taco would work well. If you're low carb, you can try to find a good low carb tortilla. My experience is like, the Mission Carb Balance and all that are bullshit. They're absolute bullshit. There's too many people on YouTube that have the continuous glucose monitors. They eat one, they do, and they see the blood spike. But if you can make something like taco shells out of something like a pork rind egg mixture using a waffle cone press that I have on my site, You basically make two from, you know, one egg and a certain amount of the breadcrumbs. Those are fantastic, and they are carnivore, and they are low carb. You can also do things like lettuce wraps and things like that as well. And then a sauce for grilled chicken thighs or drumstick, is especially skin on grilled. Like, that is just a fantastic way to use that. And John is saying to ferment salsas. And I agree, a salsa verde, salsa, anything fermented is great, but it's not like, it depends on what you're looking for out of it. Using it on something like grilled chicken thighs and drumsticks, I'm all about using that fresh. The carnitas actually really, because of the way that the fat reacts with it, really does lend itself toward that tang of the ferment. Now, remember, with a salsa verde using tomatillos versus tomatoes, you're already going to be in that tart space as well anyway. Next up, though, Alfredo cream sauce. Heavy cream, Parmesan cheese, garlic, salt, black pepper. It couldn't be easier. And I don't want to spend a lot of time explaining any of this, really. Because if I start giving you exactly how to make this stuff again without a visual to go with it, I think people will kind of tune out. But this is one that is so simple to do that I can explain it very, very quickly. And basically all you're going to do is heat your heavy cream, and, you know, you add your garlic powder, salt, black pepper to taste. And to turn it into this cheesy Alfredo, what you're going to do is get some really good, high quality grated Parmesan and just stir as you add. It's very important you are constantly moving it as you're adding the cheese, or it will clump up. If you want it to be a little bit thinner, a little bit of chicken stock can go in there as well. And this is one of those sauces that is so unbelievably simple to make, yet has so much flavor and so much fat. And because of that fat, it brings out flavors and other things, but it's also incredibly satiating. So adding just a little bit of this to a meal will take a meal that maybe you're like, you know, when you eat and you're like, that was good, but I could eat more. And like 10 minutes later, you're like, no, I feel pretty good. But then like an hour later, you're like going through the cabinets. Yeah, you add like an Alfredo sauce to that, and a lot of that will go away. Now, put it on pasta and make it a high-carb meal, and you're back to an hour and a half, 2 hours after you want to go into the pantry and find more food. But with a straight-up meat meal, absolutely fantastic. Serve over skin-on-grilled chicken, and that is indulgent as crap. And so, again, like I said, though, if you got that good crisp on your chicken, put the sauce down and let the chicken on top of it, or do a light drizzle on top of the skin. Don't plow it on there because you'll lose that crispiness of your skin. You can also, like, if you're going in the vegetable route, like things that go really good with a with an Alfredo are like roasted Brussels sprouts, or like a shaved and sauteed, you know, like fried Brussels sprout with Alfredo. Banging delicious. Green beans are good with an Alfredo as well. I don't know many things that wouldn't be good with an Alfredo, honestly. Anything that would be good with cheese is going to be good with an Alfredo. It doesn't only have to go on pasta, is my point here. Pan sauce, just a basic pan sauce. You're looking at like butter, chicken stock, white wine, shallots, garlic, salt, black pepper. You can also make a pan sauce out of the leavings behind of a steak or a pork chop or anything. This is basically, we're going to take these extra ingredients, we're going to use the stock to deglaze the pan, and then we're going to enhance whatever's already there, kind of burnt on the pan. It's exactly what it sounds like. Yeah, Richard, I'm going to star that one. We'll hit that. That would be good. That would be, wow, that would be really good. I'm not going to say it, though, because I'm going to get sidetracked. A pan sauce is exactly what it sounds like. It's what's left in the pan we're going to turn into a sauce. And it's really good on things like if you make a seared, bacon-wrapped pork tenderloin, specifically where you cut it up and you make bacon-wrapped medallions. And if you do that, you should make it thick. That's one of the keys to making, if you want to do pork tenderloin medallions, thick medallions, bacon-wrapped, seared on both sides, and it's pork. I know we've been taught to be afraid of it, but you kill trichinosis at 137 degrees. Cook it to about 140 degrees, just a little bit pink. It's okay. You won't die. You're not going to get pig zombie disease or something like that. It's going to be fine. You'll be all right. Trust me. And it will taste so much better because it's so lean, you'll dry it out. But again, now we're back to we're adding butter and white wine and shallots and garlic, and we're going to bring with that butter fat to the party because we have a lean protein. So we'll bring the fat not just for satiety, we're going to bring that fat because of flavor, variety, and elevation of the food and make it taste better just overall. And this is also like a pan sauce like this is great to do like a zoodles or like an angel hair zoodles or something like that, where we make a noodle substitute out of a squash, because this is how it would work. You do whatever your protein is, okay? You deglaze with your stock, and you can use beef stock. Chicken stock's just really neutral, right? So you can deglaze with whatever stock you want. You can go more toward the beef flavor, more toward the neutral flavor. You can use a vegetable stock, whatever it is you want to use. You can use a white wine as a deglaze, making a pan sauce as well. You can add white wine with the stock, or you can do a straight wine deglazing. It's up to you. And now we're going to take, if you've ever done zoodles, if you ever did like you used a little julienne peeler to make like an angel hair style zoodle out of a squash or something like that, it doesn't need to cook very long, does it? So you take those noodles, right, and go straight into your pan sauce and heat them through in the pan sauce and serve that as a side. So now we've made the steak or the pork chop or the chicken or whatever it is. We've done a pan sauce, and immediately you want to have your zoodles ready to go. And I like to drain them in a colander with a little bit of salt on them, sitting in the sink. They go straight into the pan sauce, maybe with a little bit more olive oil to help get things to stick. And then they go straight to your side. Done. I mean, you're talking 15 minutes, including cooking the protein, if you do it right, if you have a system down. And now you're eating a very elevated thing. You're eating something, if you were in a restaurant, you're at like $20 a plate, and you can make that, you know, depending on where you buy your protein, $5 to $8 per plate or less, depending on, again, what protein is, where you got it. If it's chicken thigh, right, you can make that two big, nice, juicy thighs, $2, about $1 a piece. You probably grew your own squash. A little bit of stock, you got like $2-$3 a plate on something. Now you're looking at something to be like $16 in a restaurant. You start to see how this all makes sense. Next, buffalo sauce. This is what everybody's familiar with, but I'm always going to leave it off because it is more versatile than just on wings. And the classic buffalo sauce is really simple. It's hot sauce, and in fact, you know, a purist would tell you it's Frank's hot sauce and butter. That's it. I like to always add garlic to my buffalo sauce. Some people like to like make it even hotter, add some cayenne or something like that. If you're using a good hot sauce, I don't think you need to put more heat into it. If you want more heat, use a hotter hot sauce is my personal opinion, but you do what you want with that. But buffalo sauce, again, it's just butter and hot sauce. And I make this a lot of the time when I'm like, I really don't know what I want to put on this tonight. And I'm like, my wife doesn't really want me to take longer to make. And I will just take a couple tablespoons of hot sauce and one tablespoon of butter in a little dish and throw it in the microwave with a sprinkle of garlic powder just till it melts and it's hot. You don't want it exploding and blowing and making splatter marks all over your microwave. Throw a paper plate over it or something, and then just mix that up, and I'll drizzle that over just about anything. Obviously, this is good on baked or fried or grilled chicken wings. We all know that, and pair it up with a blue cheese, not a ranch. Ranch is for babies. Ranch is for children, okay? Ranch is not for grown adults when they eat wings. It isn't. I'm sorry. It just isn't, and I will go to my deathbed with that claim. Ranch has been overused for way too many things, and it sucks. There is no ranch flavor. It's a bunch of shit mixed in with a bunch of crap. Don't eat that stuff, right? You can eat ranch. I don't personally care for it. But also, how about a dipping sauce? And we stay with chicken, like do a chicken skewer and do a dipping sauce. But you know what's even better? Yeah. You do a chicken skewer. So you take like your thigh, you trim it, you make it nice and flat so you get a good even grill and some char on those skewers. Take that that buffalo sauce and baste with it at the end so it stickies up a little bit. Then just play with that a little bit, right? So now we've kind of got like an Asian kind of thing going on, but it's very American because it's a buffalo sauce. But let's just go ahead and have some fun and throw some sesame seeds on the outside of that stickiness. Really, really good. Really, really simple. And then you can add a little bit more fresh sauce on the plate with those skewers. Moving on, Romesco sauce. Romesco is another one of these, like most people have no idea what a Romesco is. If you're not a cook, it's not something very common in American kitchens. It should be. Almost any cook or chef that's worked for any length of time will know how to make it, but I really don't think most people are familiar with what Romesco is. It's very simple, and most of you grow peppers if you have a garden. Red peppers, roasted red peppers, almonds, olive oil, garlic, sherry vinegar, a little bit of smoked paprika, and some salt. In a lot of ways, it's very similar to a pesto made with roasted red pepper instead of basil. It's not the same, but it is similar in texture and application. One of the places, though, that it doesn't get used very often, and it is just beautiful with, is grilled lamb. A grilled lamb with a Romesco spooned over it. The fat of the lamb and that little bit of funky thing that some people call gaminess in lamb, it's not gaminess. Gamey's not a flavor, but that little bit of funk, the hit of that Romesco will kind of cancel that a bit. So if you're a person like, I like lamb, but it's got that background flavor I'm not used to. Yeah, we call that flavor. The Romesco will counterbalance that for you. In some ways, again, this is a similarity, not the same as, but a lot of the low-calorie sweeteners actually use two different sweeteners, not to make it sweeter, because low-calorie sweeteners or no-calorie sweeteners like a stevia like a Lakanto or something like monk fruit or like a xylitol or any of those things, they have weird aftertastes, but they're different aftertastes. And when you put the two together, they sort of cancel each other. Well, the flavor that people insist on calling gamey that ain't gamey, because lamb is not game meat, okay, in lamb gets very well countered by Romesco. It's also good on pork loin, anything that could benefit from the added fat from the olive oil and that punch of the roasted red pepper. The recipe that I have for you with it says to use jarred roasted red pepper. There's nothing wrong with that. Just use good quality, but you don't have to do that. Literally take your red pepper, cut it, little olive oil and salt on it, roast it on the grill. Or you can roast the whole pepper, not cut up, salt and a little bit of oil on it, right over, if you have a gas stove, right on the burner. You can do that, then cut it up. And do not worry about peeling your peppers. Let me say it again. Do not peel your peppers. Let me say it one more time. Do not peel your peppers or something like this. There are some cases for like roasting a pepper and putting it in a bowl with saran wrap and letting it kind of cut and peeling that little thin layer of skin off. A Romesco will not need that. Trust me, it's unnecessary. Another really cool way to use Romesco, though, especially if you grow a lot of it, is eggplant. A roasted or grilled eggplant with the Romesco on top of it, serve that as a side with your protein. That's fantastic, especially instead of the big old Italian, you know, eggplants that if you don't treat them right, taste like a freaking ashtray, where you have to salt them and let some of the crap come out of the long Asian style, kind of sweet flavored eggplant. You take those long eggplants and cut them lengthwise and then hit them a little, again, back to the same thing, man, like a little olive oil and salt and grill that, and a Romesco on that as a side is just fantastic. And if you're growing things like the Ping Tong eggplants that I talk about all the time in the garden, you end up with so many of them, you need something to do with them, right? So that's a good thing. Tzatziki, which is your classic Greek sauce that you get on things like a gyro or something like that. That is so simple to make. It's Greek yogurt, the best you can get your hands on, cucumber, garlic, dill, lemon juice, salt, and pepper. That's all a tzatziki sauce is. And it's good on so many things. I like to use tzatziki as a dressing on a good salad, especially if we go a little bit Greek with the salad. You know, we use good leaf lettuce, not that crappy, non-nutritive iceberg lettuce that tastes like water leaf. Maybe a little bit of lamb. I got lamb in my brain now when I start thinking about tzatziki, but like some olives in a salad would be, or some pepperoncinis and some things like that. Just an excellent blend with a tzatziki. Obviously, cucumber in a salad and maybe like the cucumber, red onion, tzatziki salad that everybody makes and is at every potluck. I got to tell you, I'm not a huge fan of that. I like to have other things, and I don't like to be eating red onion. Like red onion in a thing, one thing, but like it's like red onion is 50% of it. Not my thing, but a lot of people like that. But here's some good stuff you can do with tzatziki that maybe is a little bit more toward the carnivore keto side of things and a little bit less thought about. Lamb meatballs. Lamb meatballs with a drizzle of tzatziki is just fantastic. If you want gyro, like a gyro, whatever they want to call it, right? Classically, obviously, it's a flatbread. But if you do a good thin sliced lamb, whether you do it in the traditional spit with the piece after piece, or just a good thin, like kind of like a shamwara lamb, and then you put that on like a good leaf lettuce and eat that like a gyro, it's pretty damn good with the tzatziki on it as well. And then it's also good with things just real simple, like a grilled or pan fried herb chicken. So like if you make a good like lemon pepper chicken or an herb roasted chicken or something like that, sliced with tzatziki, it's just delicious. And again, we're now bringing fat to a lean meat. That's always a good idea. Whenever you're dealing with lean meats, you want to go with a sauce that has a fat base, like a yogurt base or a butter base or an egg base, because that will enhance that. And there's a place for bringing up the fat where it isn't, where you might want to be more like a chimichurri on a steak that has a good amount of fat in it, because you don't need to be bringing more. Here's a simple one, miso butter. This is like so stupid, simple, and so freaking ridiculously delicious. Butter and white miso paste. That's it. It's basically a compound butter. It's less a sauce and more a compound butter. But like that, any kind of like a really good quality white fish, like a cod or even catfish, but like cod, I've tried haddock, like the saltwater white flaky fish. And then you do a miso butter, because to me, like cod and haddock, very, very popular. Huge numbers of them harvested every year, reasonably affordable. You get it pretty much year round. Getting good quality out of that is not hard to do, but it's kind of boring. It's kind of boring. It doesn't have a lot of real flavor. It's not like a trout, right? Whether it's sea trout or like a rainbow trout. It's not even like a salmon. It's not like a catfish. It's just kind of, the beautiful thing about it is it will take flavor. A branzino is another fish. It sounds really fancy, but it's, you know, or barramundi. Like, they're just very neutral. Or a tilapia. Any of those fish like that. They just don't have a lot of flavor. Miso has just this umami kick, right? Because it's got that fermented thing going on. And that, with a little salt and pepper on a boring fish, brings it out. Another option is using it with something that already has umami, and then you double it. Like, again, I'm back to like a meaty mushroom, like a hen of the woods or a shiitake or a good quality oyster mushroom, sauteed, and then while it's hot, put the miso butter on it and let it melt over. You can even add some of the miso butter directly to your pan at the end of the cook, and then a little bit of fresh dollop on top of it. Absolutely fantastic. And again, you're taking something that has great nutritional value, and if you like mushrooms, it tastes really good. A little bit of protein, a little bit of carb, but almost no fat. And we're bringing fat to the party. Fat wants to go with protein. Fat wants to go where there isn't any fat and bring out the other flavors, just like salt does. How about a soy ginger sauce? We're going to move toward the Asian side of things for the next couple of these. Really simple, like soy ginger. It sounds all complicated. It's soy and ginger, really. It's soy sauce, ginger, garlic, sesame oil, rice, vinegar, and green onion. And again, you can make variations thereof. I have like a love with ginger in my heart. The bite, the zest, the flavor of ginger, and it just begs to go with salt and garlic. So you've got the soy, the garlic, and the ginger together. You're already halfway to something delicious. This is fantastic. Drizzled over stir-fried beef. You don't have, like, not all stir-fries have to be this massive, you know, bunch of different shit, noodles and rice and crap. You just take a decent, you know, here's the thing. You take beef that is not the best cut to make a steak out of. Let's say you buy a whole chuck roll and you've got that beautiful chuck eye and Denver steak on the back end. You've got some pieces of it that make really good, basically mock short ribs. You've got some that's good for stew. But any of the stuff other than the stuff that makes a really good steak, you can cut that in thin strips. And then that will, if you don't over fry it, this is the thing. People overcook meat like crazy. When you have a tough piece of meat, you know, there's two ways to go about it. Cut it thin, cook it extremely high heat very, very quickly, and don't overdo it. So that means you need to drain it well. It doesn't, if you throw it in, it looks like it's boiling. It's, you need to just accept that you fucked up and still get it out early. If you want to get a char on it, it needs to be well dried. Like, put it on a cooling rack on a pan with a little bit of salt on it to help pull the water out. Throw it in the refrigerator in the morning and cook it that evening, where you've gotten that excess moisture air dried off of it. And then super hot, good quality fat, seared and done. I mean, this should take minutes, right? I mean, 2 or 3 minutes is what you're doing here. And then hit it with the soy ginger sauce. And one of the soy ginger works really good in like the frying pan, the skillet, the wok, what have you, right at the end. Just some of it in there and mix the meat with it and get it out. And then hit that with some sesame seeds. And then drizzle more of the soy ginger on top of it. Absolutely freaking delicious. And then pair that beef with broccoli in your stir fry. Now, my recommendation is to cook the broccoli separately, or cook the broccoli first, then pull the broccoli out, then cook your meat, then throw the broccoli back in at the end. Something like that. I just explained why you want to be careful with too much moisture with these tougher cuts of meat. Broccoli is mostly water. And you're also crowding the pan. When you crowd the pan, you get more steam, you get more condensation, you get more boiling. Stir fry is not stir boil. So unless you're in like super hot wok territory and then you know what you're doing, you ain't worried about what I'm saying, you want to make sure you keep that moisture level down in those types of cooking. Another thing is shrimp skewers. So make up some shrimp skewers, cook them on the grill. Shrimp is way easy to overcook too. Like it should not taste like a rubber ball. Cook through and done. But you throw that skewer on. When you turn it the first time, brush it, let it cook through, turn it just long enough for what you've brushed to char up a little bit, brush it again, flip it for a couple seconds and get it off. Thank me later. That is one of the best things you'll ever eat. Shrimp are not that expensive. If you buy them at the right time, the right way, et cetera, and cooked like I just said, you'll wonder why you go to restaurants. Another Asian side, I think, Szechuan chili oil. This has chili flakes, Szechuan peppercorns, garlic, ginger, oil, soy sauce, rice vinegar, sugar, sesame seeds, and salt. This goes on everything. This goes on anything and everything. It is so freaking delicious, but it's great. Make a stir fry bowl and do this. And you absolutely could do a stir fry with the ginger sauce and then drizzle the Szechuan pepper sauce on top of it. In fact, you should. You really should. The Szechuan peppercorns are one of my go-to ingredients. I do a lot of different things with them other than this. People think because Sichuan province, China, is really well known for high heat, that a Szechuan peppercorn must be high heat. They're not that hot. They are strange, actually. There's a little bit of heat, but they have almost a numbing effect on the tongue at the same time. And I don't really know of anything else quite like a Szechuan peppercorn. They're one of the key ingredients in Chinese five spice mix, for example. And there's just a lot you can do with them. Again, that stir-fried bowl, good way to go. That can be done like cheap ground beef or ground pork in a stir-fried bowl using a Szechuan chili oil. Absolutely delicious. And another thing the Szechuan chili oil is good for, roasted pork belly. However you do your pork belly, I like to give it a little bit. I want skin on. I like to do the white vinegar rub and let it sit, lots of holes in it, and get it to where you get that, you know, what the Hispanics would call a chicharrón. You get that skin to crisp up and cut it into chunks, slow cooked in the oven, and then cut into chunks. And then on the plate, drizzle on top of that skin this Szechuan chili oil. And wow, I mean, you see what I'm saying, guys? Like, we haven't really talked about cooking anything. Most of you probably don't cook anyway. All we've done is add the sauce. The sauce is the boss. Another one I want to talk to you about, as simple as it gets, is garlic butter. Garlic butter, butter, garlic, parsley, salt, black pepper. Super easy. Super easy. This is an easy one to make on the fly. I talked about like keeping some of this stuff in bottles in the fridge. There's no reason for that. This can be made in minutes. Grilled ribeye. Big lump of garlic butter on top of it. You can make garlic butter as a sauce like we've been talking about today, but the way I like to do a garlic butter is as a compound butter. And so what you'll do for that is you'll chop up your garlic, your parsley, and then you let your butter get soft on the counter, throw it in. I have a recipe for you, but you do not need it. Just do what I'm saying, like by eye. Mix it up with a fork. Then put it out onto a cellophane wrap, plastic wrap, and roll it into a log. So once you kind of get that log shape going with it, just keep going, make it tighter and tighter, and then tuck it under and put that in your refrigerator. Just leave it there. That's all you have to do. When you want to use it, take it out and cut slices off it. Take just a puck of that and put it on a well, beautifully cooked steak. And it changes everything. And it'll mix with the meat juice. And then your sides can partake in that glory that will be left behind as you're eating the steak. And you can do that with, like, this compound butter thing. I'm giving you one way to do it. But blue cheese compound butter on a steak is also fucking good. And anything you think would be good in a compound butter probably will be good in a compound butter. Next is a gremolata. A gremolata is another thing that is not really a sauce. It's more like a paste. A gremolata is super easy. Parsley, lemon zest, and garlic. That simple. Really great on roasted lamb shanks. So if you do a slow-cooked lamb shank, and then as a finish on the lamb shank with all the juice and stuff out of the Dutch oven or whatever you made it in, and then a gremolata on that. And a lot of these things use similar ingredients. Like we've talked about using parsley, lemon zest, and garlic already today. We just put them in a different formula. We just put them in a different ratio here. Another use for gremolata is like a finishing touch on pan-seared fish. So we talked about doing pan-seared fish with a lemon butter and stuff, but a gremolata is great on a pan-seared fish. And it to me, really is good on fish that need less help for some reason, even though it has a lot of flavor. Like if you do like a blackened catfish, a gremolata on that causes all of those blackening spices to really come out, a little bit stick to the palate. So you get that effect where when you're done eating, you still taste your food in a good way. And it makes you want to eat a little bit more, a little bit crave. You got that little burn stays there with you, even though it's not super hot. A mustard cream sauce. I have to tell you that, I wanted a lot of diversity. I know a lot of people love mustard. This is not one of my favorites. There's only a few things I really would want to make this to go on. But it's very simple. It's heavy cream, Dijon mustard, garlic, salt, black pepper. Very, very simple. What I will make this for, and it's about the only thing that I will personally be like, I'm going to make a mustard sauce, like a mustard cream sauce for, is a German-style sausage. So like a bratwurst or a good quality German sausage, even like a German apple sausage. Or I do a sausage that the recipe for is in the MSB with a spreadsheet. You can just change the amounts and it will give you it will adjust the recipe. You want to do 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 12 pounds, however much meat you have, you change that number, all things change. And that one's kind of like a German-Italian because it's got garlic, right? And it kind of really moves toward the pork German style, but it's got fennel with it, so that pulls it back toward the Italian. Any sausage like that is going to be delicious with sauerkraut. That's where this mustard cream sauce is amazing. So you do the mustard cream sauce, you do a German-style sausage with sauerkraut. Make your own sauerkraut. Do a bohemian-style sauerkraut, but add carrots. So do, whatever your cabbage is that you're growing or buying. And then about, if you have, let's say 4 cups of the cabbage that you're making your sauerkraut with, do about 1 cup of matchstick carrot with it. The sweetness will play against the tartness and the sourness of the kraut and caraway seeds. So a bohemian with the caraway seeds, but add the matchstick carrots. That with you grill or fry the sausage that's browned and then put down the sauerkraut and put the sausage over it, do the mustard on the side, grab the piece of cut sausage with the little bite of the sauerkraut and the dab of that mustard sauce. Oh me. I am not huge on mustards, especially creamy Dijon mustards. I'm more to like the full seed mustards. But with that combination, it is dynamite. Also, mustard actually goes really well with chicken. Why do you think so many little kids are out there eating their chicken nuggets? One of the options that kids never seem to want is honey mustard. Sweet and mustard and that tang of the mustard against chicken plays nice. So a mustard cream sauce dribbled over chicken thighs or wings is actually really good too, especially a grilled skin-on example of chicken like that. Coconut curry sauce. Let's do a little Malaysian, Vietnamese, Thai kind of thing, Indian side of thing. Coconut milk, curry paste, garlic, ginger, lime juice, fish sauce, salt. This is great, like over anything that you would do with a curry, like a seafood or whatever. But again, chicken thighs and drumsticks are cheap. A lot of people are trying to figure out how to eat cheap now, right? Chicken thigh, drumsticks, skin on, grilled or pan fried with the skin crisped up or oven roasted with the skin crisped up. There's like 10 of these 15 sauces that go great on that. This curry is one of them. This is a bomb of flavor and super easy to make. because you can use a store-bought curry paste with it if you don't want to make your own. And I don't make this that much, so that's exactly what I do with it. Another option is like sauteed shrimp or scallops or a mix of both with a coconut curry sauce. You almost can't find something this won't be good on. It's honestly one of those things, like, you have to remember that you know how to make it so that you give it a try on things that you normally would do something else with. And then I'm going to give you one more, an avocado sauce. How's an avocado sauce not a guacamole? Well, you make it thinner. So you would use avocado, lime juice, cilantro, garlic, olive oil, and salt. And you're going to use enough of the oil to thin it to where it will, like, go in a squeeze bottle and become like a creamy avocado sauce. If you wanted to thin it a little bit more, make it a little bit more creamy, you could use a couple tablespoons of heavy cream added to it, mixed and blended into that as well. This is, again, grilled chicken, grilled steak tacos, or a taco bowl if you're not going to have a taco shell or what have you. Fantastic, as you would expect. But it's also a great dipping sauce for roasted sweet potato fries or roasted carrot fries. It's kind of crazy how good it is on there. But again, you're on something that has very little fat, and you're bringing fat to the party, and you're not just using butter again. So all of this today I did mainly to try to get you thinking, and I'd like, with my final thoughts on today's episode, to give you kind of a challenge out of this. There are so many people that want to up their game as a cook, and you know, I can only do so much as a podcaster with teaching you how to cook. There's things I mentioned today, like making sure that when you're going to try to sear meat that you get the excess moisture off it. And I mean every drop. Paper towel, push it down, a little bit of salt, air dry in the fridge. And when you pull it out of the fridge, blot it dry again before it hits the pan. Things like that. You know, how you cut an onion, et cetera. There's so many, like, and how to build layers of flavor. These are things that you have to learn over time. But one of the great things to add to all of this is the sauces. So here's a clue, or here's an idea of a challenge, right? I just gave you 15 sauces. None of them are that hard. The most difficult is the hollandaise. You can have hollandaise break. It will take some, it will frustrate you. So maybe don't do it first. Once a week, for the next 15 weeks, make one of these sauces and incorporate it into a meal. That's it. That's 15 weeks, right? So that's not quite 4 months. It's like 3 months in a few weeks, right? You will blow yourself away with the knowledge you'll gain as you do this. Because when you say, like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do that gremolata that Jack said, or I'm going to do a romesco, or I'm going to do a miso butter, a tzatziki, right? Or whatever it is that you're going to do. Then you're going to say to yourself, well, self, what am I going to do tonight? Well, I took chicken out, but how am I going to make it to go with that? That's just one meal a week for the next 4 months, call it. To elevate your home cooking ability hugely with very little cash outlay, because most of what you need to make these things is already in your home. Maybe, yes, to make the Szechuan chili oil, you have to buy some Szechuan chili peppers. Order them on Amazon, they'll show up. And when they show up, you're like, oh, yeah, that's why I ordered those. And now today or this week, that's the one that I'm going to do. The links to the recipes that you can modify as you choose to are in the audio notes. All the things I said today as far as what it is and what's in it and what it pairs with, they're all in the audio notes. You don't have to remember anything. You don't have to take any notes. All you have to do is go pull up episode 3617 of the Survival Podcast. And so all you do is go to the Survival Podcast. If this is you're listening to this and you finally got to it, it's a couple weeks later, just go to the search box and stick in 3617. You'll find it. And do it. Take the challenge. Because this is a challenge that only benefits you. I don't get the thing about this. I'm not trying to sell you anything. Yeah, you might buy some ingredients through T-Spaz, and I'll make a fucking nickel if you buy a package of Szechuan chili peppers. You think it's really that important to me that I make that extra nickel? You don't understand what I'm doing at all, right? So I don't get anything. But what do you get? You get this massive amount of knowledge. Now, let's think about this from a combination standpoint. You have 15 sauces. 15 sauces, throw 3 proteins at each one, throw a pork, a chicken, a beef, or a seafood at each one. So three of the four. You have 45 different meals only using four protein choices that you can make because of this sauce. That's not adding any other variations. Like, it's chicken. Well, is it just a simple grilled chicken, or is it a lemon chicken, or is it an herb crusted chicken? You do that, and now you take each protein and you come up with three versions of that. And I in my head, I'm not going to try to do the math. Somebody out there that's going to be my quant, right? I've got three proteins, right? Three of four proteins. And each protein, I have three different ways to cook that protein. And for each protein, I have 15 sauces I can integrate. What does that come out to in variety? I don't think you'll finish a year running out of ideas if you do that. Because then, well, this one can go with that one that can go with this one. And maybe we do this, and maybe we do two sauces with this meal, one on the side and one on the protein. Yeah? And then you will find, so John says 135 options. I actually think it's more if you start thinking about how now you're going to pair it with different sides. And some of those sides are going to use a sauce, and some of those are going to use the same sauce, and some of them are going to use no sauce. Right? That's why I said I didn't want to try to do it in my head. I'd have to sit down and map that shit out. But just on the straight level, it's 135. So you could go just on that straight level 135 days and never eat the same thing because you learned how to make 15 sauces. And that's saying all beef is beef, as though ribeye and chuck and round and ground are all the same thing. You start doing that, you could go years before you eat the same thing, pulling from the same basic groups. And that means that your ability, your knowledge, your capability, and your confidence will rise. Because the number one thing that makes people terrible cooks isn't terrible technique. It's not terrible ingredients. It's poor confidence. Because you don't have confidence, you don't go at it with what needs to be done. You read and it says, you know, use one garlic clove. And you're like, but I really like garlic, but oh, I better not throw 10. Because I'm like, when I see like one clove of garlic, I'm like, you're not the boss of me, right? I mean, or I give you a recipe for something like chicken soup, and I say use fresh parsley, and you don't have parsley, so you don't make the soup. You could just not use parsley. You could use dry parsley. You could use the leaves from celery, right? I mean, you could say, fuck, Jack, I don't like parsley. Like, you have to have confidence. And confidence comes from repetition and doing things. And the more confident you get, the more adventurous you get, and the more willing you are to try things. And this is what I really encourage you to do for your cooking. Don't worry about things that are really, really complicated. Find the things that are really, really simple and learn to execute the simple thing with precision. And I'll tell you a quick story here. It does involve carbs, though. I was in New York City, and this was actually, I told a story a few weeks ago about, I used to be a consultant to Donald Trump. So we actually, one of my employees went to New York to meet with some of the people at Trump's company. And we did briefly get to actually say hi to a future president. We didn't know that at the time, but it was a very, very brief. Oh, there he is. Hey, how you? Oh, God, you know how he is. And but we're there. And we stayed at this hotel right across the street from Madison Square Garden called Hotel Pennsylvania. Great big rooms. Super rock hard beds, most affordable place in the city, centrally located, so it was a decent place to stay. And at the time, there was a restaurant and bar right underneath the hotel, like an outside exit for it. And we go to this bar, and we've got like this musical talent that's basically doing like advanced karaoke, right? She had like a guitar and a karaoke machine. So she was playing guitar plus using the karaoke machine. She was really good. We're sitting there listening to this, having some drinks and shit. And there's this old man sitting at the bar, like two bar stools away from me. And he gets up and he must work here because he goes back in the kitchen. He comes out of the kitchen. This is getting close to closing time. And he has this pasta dish. And it's this kind of a lemon herb chicken pasta and arugula. Probably some white wine and garlic on the pasta. And we're sitting there. The place is really cleared out. Like, me and this guy, Mark, are like the only two people left in the place. It's going to close in 15 minutes. He went and made this for the staff. Well, he tells the bartender, bring me two more plates. He puts the two plates in front of me and Mark. I start eating this, right? I don't add no, I just leave it. I know what I'm looking at here. This guy made it for the staff. I don't need to be putting salt on it. I don't need to be fucking with it. I just need to eat it. And I was eating it, and I said to myself, this is amazing. It's so simple, but it's so perfectly done. This old Italian dude grabs me by the face and kisses me on the cheek. He said, I love you. I love you. Nobody understands how hard it is to be good and simple. Everybody wants, he's an Italian accent, you know, like, everybody want complicated. Everybody want fancy. When you can do simple, you can do anything. That stuck with me because I'm telling you this story. That was like 2008 that or seven, somewhere in that range when that happened. There is a beauty to simplicity. Nothing I gave you today is complicated. It's elevated, but it's not complicated. The most complicated thing is the hollandaise. And that's only because if you do it wrong, it breaks. It's not complicated to make garlic butter. It is not complicated to make tzatziki. A real Greek grandma can make a tzatziki in her sleep, side, like, you know, like left-handed making it while they're dealing with some other crap over here. None of this is hard. It's just knowing how to use it. So if you'll take my challenge, 15 weeks, 15 sauces, send me pictures, tell me stories, connect with me on social media. Let me know what you've done. Don't just do what I said to do. Don't just do the – you can use the pairings I said if that helps you, but if you think, you know – I think this thing would be really good with that thing. Do it. Try it. Because here's another thing that you have to learn how to do to be a great cook. You can't be afraid. Like if you're like, I think this could be good with that. So I'm going to look and see if anybody did it. And if nobody did it, I'm not going to do it. Uh-uh. No. If your culinary instincts tell you these two flavors will be good together, do it. And we're talking about a sauce. So what do? I think this sauce will be good with this thing. Put the sauce on the side. Try it. If you're like, nah, then eat the thing you would have eaten without a sauce anyway. And you know that sauce doesn't go with that. You just learned something. If you think, you know, this is okay, but that one I made last week would have been better with this thing and this would have been, then you learn something. This is a walk of experience that no one can ever give you. You can go to a culinary institute. You can go to the Cordon Bleu. You can become a super chef. You can learn all the techniques. Or you can actually just learn how to cook really great food for yourself. Most people aren't going to do those other things because it's not worth it for us, right? Honestly, I don't know how anybody pursues that career because it's a brutal career to pursue. You know, these people go spend $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 for a culinary degree, and the first job they get is $14 an hour as a line cook. You can walk in off the street and get that job. And you will never do what they do at those high-end restaurants at home fully. Because the guy that makes the stock that gets used shows up at 3 o'clock in the morning to make the stock from last night's leftovers. There's 50 people in some of these restaurants that have touched some portion of that dish before you got it. Even if it's put together quickly, the stages of it, that's being a restaurant chef. What we're talking about here is being a gourmet cook. There are different things, and they should be approached from different angles. And a chef can experiment, but he has to experiment with those staff meals, right? The meals that are always good, right? But then he has to experiment with that and then adjust it into the menu. You don't have to do that shit. You think A and B go together, stick it together. The worst thing that's going to happen is you'll be like, nah, my grandson finds stuff all the time as he wants to cook. And I have two rules. One, your grandma does not clean up after you. You clean up after you. Two, whatever you make, you eat. You don't like it, don't make it again. That's my only two rules. Otherwise, do whatever you want. I don't care. And it's amazing what a kid will come up with. And if a 14-year-old kid can do it, you can do it too. With that, let's take a couple questions. Nine, actually. Questions and comments, and we'll close up for today. Richard, I already mentioned him at the beginning. He said his water is off, but it doesn't matter because they are prepped. And another comment on Berkey, so we already covered that. John Paul Schmaja says, getting pregnant women to eat the protein they need, 120 to 150 grams a day, is a lot easier with sauces. Yeah, there's something about sauce that it triggers this kind of response to eat more. So the reality of why that happens, and it gets dangerous when you put all three of the macros together and you go for what's called the bliss point. And this is what companies like Lay's do to a potato chip, and they say you can't eat just one because they literally mean it, where you have sweet, you have fat, and you have protein together. That really goes to the bliss point. And sweet and fat can get to the bliss point all by their own. When we stick with protein and fat, we don't overeat, but we will maybe eat more than we would have otherwise in a good way. We don't overeat, but a person who for some reason, like John's saying, is going to undereat otherwise will eat a proper amount, because protein and fat do come together, but not as much as you would think. In other words, if you go kill a deer, you know, you have some leaf fat and you have some tallow and everything, but the meat itself is very, very lean. So if we're not looking at animals that have been selectively bred to marble more fat, or some older animals that have been on grass for a really long time, you're looking at a leaner meat. So when you do find fat and protein together in nature, we're kind of hardwired to eat more of it while we can, because it's not very common. So I never thought of it, but John's right on that. Hocus says, got a really good carnivore gravy recipe. Make a pan sauce. Use it as your gravy. Do something like a rotisserie. I did a pork butt rotisserie for the workshop that we just did on Saturday. And you take your rotisserie and you put your charcoal in baskets to both sides of it and put your protein on a rotisserie and let it rotate and let it drip the juices down. Then, since it's really just kind of like a jus at that point, if you want it to be more gravy-like, you can thicken it using something like, again, almond flour can work. It's not the greatest, but you can use it. But like guar gum, just look up how to do it so you don't use too much or use it wrong. But cream cheese is a great thickener if you're not turned off by that background flavor of the cream cheese. Like, my wife hates it. We just go more with a jus. The other thing you can do is just say, once in a while, I'm going to go out a little bit, use really good high-quality flour, make a roux, and use less of it so you don't thicken it as much. And then use that gravy more like a sauce than something like to fill your whole belly up with, where you drink so much gravy, it goes down into your leg, and if you break your leg, gravy comes out. Don't do that, and you'll be just fine. Richard got another comment on the Berkey, so I am going to skip that one because we already covered it. John Schmata says, should I be chatting just in YouTube? I've been doing YouTube and Rumble. You're better off, John, in YouTube, because like on a day like today where I'm by myself and I'm using my outline from my other screen, I don't even see Rumble because it doesn't come in the back end. John says, mustard powder, tomato paste, roasted red pepper puree all make great thickeners and emulsifiers. We'll add flavor, of course. So there you go. Tomato paste, roasted red pepper. And you know what I just thought of would make a really good thickening agent then? Instead of a puree. Powdered, dehydrated vegetable powder. Except you were going to get that flavor. So, because I've done this for other things, like if you do a dehydrated tomato and you grind that into a powder, which probably means also would bring flavor to the party, but it wouldn't be like the hit you in the face flavor of tomato, but a better background. Mushroom powder. Mushroom powder would make a great thickening agent as well. Thanks for that, John. Houston says, what is the lowest temperature and time for cheap, tough steak in a sous vide? Well, how do you want to do it? Like, it depends. But, like, let's say we had, like, a mock tender or something like that, or, like, a London broil. To me, this is what you want to do. About 130 to 135 degrees for at least 4 hours. That's where you want to be. And then, this is the trick with steaks like this. Don't sear it, especially like a thick, like a London broil, while it's hot. Pull it, leave it in the bag, throw it in the refrigerator overnight. Cook it the next day on the grill to your finished temperature you want, which it should still be a rare, a pink, or whatever, okay? But that will give you a lot more time to get a lot more of a good sear on like a thicker cut that may not sear as easily with like the torch method or the hot pan method. And a lot of times when you sous vide something at that temperature, if you go just a little bit too long when you're getting your sear, you'll overcook it. And if you do it a little bit with like a ribeye or something, it's very forgiving. If you do it with something that's going to be a tough cut, it's a lot less forgiving. And because those tougher cuts, since they're low in fat, once they go over, those fibers just toughen up. And then this was the thing I was kind of drooling about midstream. Richard says, comment, shark Alfredo. A black tip with something like a blackening mix, but maybe not as out there. It's like a blackened Cajuning thing. Maybe you're using like salt, pepper, and paprika and garlic, just that. And the paprika helps you get that char, that color on it. You take a nice thick shark steak, coated with that, and grill that. Cut it into chunks and then do an Alfredo over that. That would be freaking – I would have never, ever thought of that. That's why I like doing shows like this. That's why I like bringing ideas like this to you, because you're like, well, what about this? And I'm like, oh, shit, that would be delicious. I have seen a lot of comments, by the way, about shark online and all this crap that you need to do with it. And I am not going to read all. John has like 20 more comments. So I'm going to read one more, and then we're going to wrap up. He says, marinate meat in the dressing, save the liquid, and reduce on stovetop with chicken is cooking thick again. Now you got a sauce. Okay, so he's basically saying any kind of a marinade or dressing you use as a marinade, when you're done with the marinade, reduce it and thicken it, and then you've got a sauce. Yeah, I agree with that. And John has a whole – the reason he's – so vocal, he's gone Jake Robinson on us today, because he has a whole line of products that are salad dressings and sauces and things like that, and he does a fantastic job with them. They're really, really good. Anyway, things like an Alfredo and shark, I've never heard of that. But what I was saying on the shark, I see all these things, you soak it in buttermilk, soak it in milk, do this. Here's the key for you guys. If you're buying shark and it tastes like piss, that means whoever processes didn't know what they were doing. That's uncommon, but so is shark in a fishmonger shop in most instances from what I've seen. The key with shark is they literally do pee through their skin. This is not a problem unless you handle the fish wrong. The key with the shark is to immediately, and I mean immediately, kill it and bleed it out. When we go to Sanibel, Florida, we generally take two or three black tips over, a 10-day trip. One a day is what you're allowed, and we usually look for one that's between 24 and 30 inches, little pups. There are billions of these things, okay? They're not even a threatened. They're not even thought about being threatened. The numbers we catch alone. I've had days I've caught 50 or more young black tips on the beach. And usually one of them will end up with a swallowed hook, and he gets to volunteer to graduate to shark bites. When we kill one of those, they're pretty small, but you have the whole Disney crowd and shit. So I take a towel, and there's literally like a chef, a fish cleaning station at the hotel we stayed at. And I wrap the shark in the towel while it's still alive. I leave straight off the beach, and I take it up to there, and I immediately – it's still flipping when I fillet it, right? Never had an off taste at all. If you've got a bigger shark, what you want to do is you want to either cut it at the gills and the tail and bleed it and gut it and bleed it immediately, okay? Or if it's a shark, and it's a good size shark, but it's not too big to fit completely in an ice box, you put it in a cooler and you cover it in ice. I don't mean on the ice. I mean you cover it in the ice. And this is why. As it begins to die of hypothermia, its survival mode will kick in, and all of the stuff that would normally excrete out through the skin, all that urea, will stay in the guts as the shark attempts. There's no thought process. And biologically, the shark attempts to save its internal organs. So all the blood flow, all the energy goes to the internal organs. And by the time you clean that shark, there is absolutely no urea whatsoever excreted through the skin. Therefore, it's not in the flesh. So shark is easy. You just have to follow the rules. And if you break the rules, then you can do all the freaking milk soaking and other bullshit you want, and you will still have a shitty product. Because you ain't getting that flavor out of there, right? Like, it just ain't happening. And if you are ever buying shark and you're not sure, ask the guy to put it on, like, the paper they're going to wrap it in for you and hold it. Smell it. If it was handled wrong, you'll get a whiff of urea. And if you get a whiff of urea on shark meat, do not buy it. Anyway, that was an add-on bonus for you guys today. And didn't really plan on that. So let me go ahead and wrap up tomorrow. Oh God. Is it Hale, Thomas Hale, Jeremy Hale, Jeff Hale, whatever. The AI guy that I had on about a month ago, he's coming back. Josh Hale is coming back, and we're going to be talking about AI again. It's going to be interesting. Maybe to get his thoughts on this new DeepSeek out of China. I'll throw this at you on the AI thing. You guys know I use AI. I try to be careful with how I use AI and what I rely on, and you should too. This new thing out of China, this DeepSeek or whatever it is, it's open source code, but the code bros ain't had time to pull it apart yet. I've already had some feedback telling me that this thing is analyzing you at a level that you can't imagine. Keystroke speeds, all types of stuff, and it's taking that data and it's sending it back to the mothership. I would stay the fuck away from this thing until the code bros have a chance to do what code bros do. It is open source. You can run it self-hosted, and that may be a great thing. I'll also tell you on that one, I think the Chinese are lying. I don't think they're lying about its capabilities. I think they're lying about its cost. It's very easy for them to say, we make this very, very cheap, right? They always say that. And what they're saying is that they can spin up an AI model quicker, faster, and for less money than like a ChatGPT or something. There's no way to verify that yet. Just be careful on anything with new code, because it is now the number one downloaded AI app in our country. And just the publicity they gave themselves by making these claims made that happen. That means it just went on to millions and millions and millions of devices that it's probably now surveilling for more than just what you're asking the AI unit. Be careful with code, especially when the source is known to be from a place that likes to harvest data, which is pretty much everybody. So I know that's everywhere, but there is something about when you stick it on a mobile device that you carry everywhere with you. I'll be interested to hear Josh's thoughts on that tomorrow. With that, guys, take care. I'll catch you tomorrow with that interview on AI. Just run you around. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.